Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good day and thank you for tuning into Eagle FM this wonderful Monday afternoon. Thank you for tuning into Mind the Gap, your drive time show. It's Home Run, your drive time show. I know I'm going to pay for that. I know someone who is texting. Home Run, your drive time show, keeping you company, of course, from right now until the hour of 6, as always. And today's discussion on the table is digital health policy. Let's see if we can use technology to complement our need to reach the right universal service provision in the country. And this is not something that's coming out of Namibia's health playbook. This is coming out of the global health initiative, coming out of the World Health Economic World Health Organization, of course. World Health Economic Forum. Now I want to mix two different organizations. Now, this is somewhat, now, of course, when it comes to this digital health discussion, the national digital health policy that we are, that's going to be, to form like as the center of our source of reference for today's Home Run discussion. We're looking at the national digital health policy, national, that means it's, this is tailored strictly for Namibia, even though, this is something that is basically being addressed by different countries. But of course, like which nation's leader does not want to, to have, the universal health care for its people. I don't know any normal leader would want that. So, Namibia is one of those countries that obviously, would like to have universal, health, aka, having the efficiency of the, of health service provision to the point where it's, everyone has access to it. Obviously, the whole, there are pros and cons that comes obviously with this discussion, and you can, just from that introduction alone, there are already points that you can make for or against that. And now that's just when it comes to, that's just when it comes to the health, health itself as a, as a service that everyone requires. When you throw in technology, the use of technology to sort of like expand that, to expand that that provision, it just raises again a lot of questions. Most of which are coming from, of course, infrastructure. Do you have the, do you have the tech infrastructure? And because right now we have, issues with the physical infrastructure that's used in dispensation of health services. Now, when you throw in a technology, you are just piling up the need for that infrastructure. But those are sort of like the weaknesses. But we're going to get to that in a few. Right now, we sort of like, just lay the foundation of where is this whole idea coming from? And it's as old as time. If you're born in 2005, that's how old the idea is. Of course, the National Digital Health Policy is the one that we are going to be using today. This one is tailored for Namibia, and it's set to run from 2026 to 2036. It's a 10-year time, a 10-year period. Now, World Health Organization. I'm really hoping at this point we all know what World Health Organization is, because, jeez. Yeah. Believe it or not. Look, I'm in this line of work. That's why a lot of things basically sound familiar, both local, national, regional, and globally. And once I had someone, I swear I'm not making this up, ask what the United Nations is. And I was like, okay, we have a long way to go. If someone is asking, what is the UN? Okay.
But then again, it will be very unfair for me to sort of like criticize someone who cannot, you know, who doesn't know what UN or WHO or WEF are, because I'm in this line of work where I'm, where I have, you know, I have all these things on repeat. And repetition is a very, you know, repetition is a very, you know, it's a natural way of learning something, which is why we, you know, we pick up, you know, things from our environment when we, you know, when we are growing up, because of how they're frequently repeated. Now, the digital, now the national digital health policy, this is of course coming, you know, nationally it's coming out of the Ministry of Health. And now when you throw in the digital discussion, well, the Ministry of ICT, obviously, you know, we're now venturing into their territory. Now, to take you back to 2005, this, it turns out it has a very interesting historical, you know, historical background to it. Now, takes us back to 2005. The idea is to expand, you know, health provision using technology. You are basically, you know, the idea is to employ or more like exploit the, you know, a technological advancement and use it to our advantage in terms of universal health coverage. Now, in 2005, the World Health Organization, you know, brought up a resolution on e-health. That's obviously the E is for electronic. An e-health, which then urged member states to consider drawing up a long-term strategic plan to develop and implement e-health services. This is electronic-related health services. Because when it comes to some of the health issues, time is everything. So instead of going the traditional way of, you know, let's get an emergency crew or an ambulance from A to B, how about while that, that health crew or emergency responders are dispatched to a specific location, isn't there something that we can do using technology to sort of like, to ensure that the odds of of the victim basically getting help ASAP, and also them obviously being saved, sort of like increased. Mr. Lynx.
Yeah, it's weird weather. Colleagues that want to keep you for meetings and everything is wonderful.
Yeah, it's an excellent weather.
No, it was storming earlier, Helmut.
Yeah, it.
While I was looking at you guys being stormed away.
No, we're just chilling. Well, the good thing about this weather is, it contributes to both agriculture and population, depending on which angle you look at it from.
You know,
we're talking about health, dude.
I know. Population expansion is also, I mean, even that joke that you made earlier when I said I will work on the new planner for the new month.
Yeah.
And I said I will populate it. And you were like, yeah, population.
You got this, dude.
Vision 2030. I'm like, what?
Not now.
What is Hamu joking about here in a WhatsApp message? But yeah, you are right. But here's the concern, Hamu.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm walking in here with a slightly, which will technically throw the train of thought off that you were on.
Yeah.
So I met a guy, Hamut. You know, obviously we've been in the process of doing something there at the house, and over the weekend I met a welder who had experienced probably one of the worst sort of like on the job accidents. He fell from scaffolding when the guy that was supposed to help him at the bottom of the scaffolding let go. Turned around and walked somewhere else, and while he was busy working up there, it collapsed below. And the biggest concern is still, you can get hurt anywhere else across this country, ne?
Yeah.
And the closest regional administrative capital of this of each of the regions will still refer you to Windhoek. Now, anyone knows, when it comes to emergency services, healthcare, the universal health policy as well, it's all about providing quality healthcare so the public health institutions and distribution points, so that everyone gets treated the same way. There's no discrimination aspects taking place, and you don't have these, you know, inequalities between healthcare, between private and public taking place. But we know why the inequalities between public and private take place is because it's a question of accessibility, meaning do you have the money to demand immediate service?
That brings us back to the food insecurity discussion.
Or do you go and sit in the same queue that our former colleague Herta and I went and sat in? Obviously, Herta.
For hours.
Herta had the unfortunate scenario of the incorrect tooth being taken out. I'm sorry, Herta, if you're listening.
She's so hunting you down.
And I was told, nah, dude, there's like 30 elderly and 50 babies in ahead of you, and this is our quota, 20 people for the day. And I was like, yo, so I'm gonna sit with a swollen tooth, this pain, and everything in this discomfort for the rest of this week? No. So it all boils down to this particular picture. Now, the policy sounds wonderful. The policy even identifies in its executive summary that the previous policy that ended in 2025, it highlighted, once again, divisions, departments, ministries operating in silos, discussions of how, you know, operations between said departments in the health sector didn't just gel and fit in properly.
Yeah.
And then there was obviously the obvious constraints of funding, and the other scenario is obviously where donor funding decided what to support. So, yeah. And this is just a policy document. I mean, I'm not depressed, guys, but I had to give you that real-world scenarios that we see happening versus, you know, the desired position. What is that thing we learned in consumer buyer behavior? A lofty disposition. So when I say lofty disposition, meaning the policy itself, dear listeners, I'm not ridiculing the policy, but it has this elevated, desired position. It's like it's saying we're already here, we want to be here, we see ourselves here, and then they go and put it in one sentence that just says things didn't work out in the previous policy because of XYZ. But you also don't know if XYZ had been sorted out.
Let's go with Mr. Shobon's description of these expensive promises. They're very good. They're very good promises because, you know, you want to reach everyone in terms of health, health service provision.
Mm.
You want to reach them ASAP at the very time that they need the help that they need. Whether it's an accident at work or one of the, the feet that comes every now and then for any of the non-communicable diseases.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to reach them ASAP. And you want to, communicate with them and maybe just anyone around them to see if you can just assist them digitally for the meantime that you have dispatched that's on the way. But again, this whole thing comes to, It keeps coming back to, you are looking at it from infrastructure alone. It's already throwing one giant fork in that road.
Yeah.
Yeah, because taking out the digital discussion out of the health service provision.
Meaning getting back to basics.
Yeah, just getting back to basics.
Yeah.
You still, you know, especially in the public sector, we still need a lot of manpower. You know, I believe, I'm one of those people that basically believe that most of the accidents that, that takes place in the public sector, maybe you can attribute some of them to the, to the lack of experience, but most of them you can attribute some of it to overworking. Because if you look at the health professionals that you have in the public sector and the number of people that they serve, there is no way you can be overworked. And when you're overworked, it doesn't matter how much experience you have. You are bound to have, impaired judgment.
Mm.
There's one doctor, I think that was in 2015 or 2016, that found himself in legal trouble in Florida. Because he was performing this female body enhancement surgeries, because they are very lucrative. There's a legal limit of how many patients you're allowed to take per day.
Yeah.
He was taking more than that because of how lucrative the industry is. And one woman, I think she was from, I'm not sure if she was from Cuba, Mexico, Mexico, one of the South American countries, died on the operating table.
Mm.
Yeah. And, you know, the investigation team found that the man was taking more than the legal, legal patient limit per day because he was making a lot of money. Now, here's the thing. Just back to the basics. We already have manpower problem. We already have infrastructure problem. And that infrastructure, runs from the building itself to the equipments that are needed.
Yeah.
And then you throw in the medicine, obviously the medicine, all these things. Now, when you throw in, technology, that technology itself is coming with its own, infrastructure questions.
It's a good thing you highlighted those points, Helmut.
It's a lot.
I mean, because yes, we broke up the budget analysis into like three parts. Obviously, we had 26 February's budget analysis without us knowing that democracy was going to be delivered the Saturday on the 28th to Iran, or partially. Let me say partially, because people were still playing Rocket Man with each other. However, the fear is, which I've continuously said, is we've got to hope and we've got to actually make wishful thinking like we're wishing for a birthday present that no one invades Iran.
As in boots on the ground.
Yeah, boots on the ground. And it seems threats of boots on the ground have been made since Saturday or Friday into this week. Now, I highlight this primarily because obviously, Minister of Finance, Erica Schifuda, did not know of Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's rocket man tendencies on 28 February.
Oh, no, forget Minister of Finance. Congress didn't know.
Yeah, Congress also didn't know. That's... Actually, NATO didn't even know. NATO also didn't know, which is a defense alliance, supposedly. So, no one knew that that rocket man... Olympic Games were going to kick off on Saturday, 28 February.
Yeah.
Now, then, Robin Sherborne's particular budget analysis highlighted, obviously, which is the operational budget and the development budget side of things. And he had a very nice table there, but I don't have that up right now in front of me because the first particular train of thought, Helmut, that I want us to quickly qualify that factors into this discussion and also into the budget discussion as well,
yeah,
is when you've got to look at, where's that sentence under the executive summaries? It's the second paragraph and it starts with however, not with Namibia. It notes, and this is the executive summary that was written by the executive director of the Ministry of Health, that being Mr. Penda Itindi, who noted, however, the digital health landscape, remains characterized by siloed solutions, limited interoperability, gaps in digital literacy, and the absence of a comprehensive regulatory and policy framework.
You also find that in SWOT analysis.
Yeah.
Of the same.
Because, and I was actually surprised when I saw the SWOT analysis. I was like, do people still call it that, SWOT analysis? But it also shows you, get back to basics. So that's what you're sometimes also told as an athlete.
Yeah.
Get back to basics. Just do your basics again. And then you work from there. But here's the thing that actually just explains the previous policies sort of like, clunky approach. When I say clunky, it literally highlights through the siloed systems and the forth. He noted, where does that sentence start? So he noted, although the National eHealth Strategy, which ran from 2021 to 2025, provided an initial framework for action, its implementation was constrained, fragmented, and largely dependent on external funding and technical assistance. Now, those two sentences work together definitely. Those two sentences can also be viewed in their own independent scenario, primarily because, gaps in digital literacy, Helmut, is a discussion where I've realized the training for just basic computer skills, as it sometimes is known as, is sometimes also a major stumbling block or a hurdle across, let's rather say, various sectors? I mean, today, Hamid, I observed at one of the building supply and DIY retailers here in Windhoek, I observed how they managed, you know, the checking out of stock. But think of the stock as in like tar poles, fence, you know, fence wiring and all that you buy from a yard. I observed how what I had to do was we had to buy a new gate. I observed how they deal with the checking out, making sure that this is a legit invoice, a legit note, because you get your invoice that you paid with at the cashier, and you get another document that is a document used by the guys that work in the yard that have to go and get you the stock that is on your invoice that you paid for, and then you hand when you drive out with your car or with your bucky or with the truck, then both sets of paper have to be checked by another office. So they've got stages of this checking, this monitoring and evaluation process. And all of it is assisted by a digital platform. Now at the heart, Helmut, you can see, okay, so how to make this thing bulletproof is that there's at every phase, at every stage, there's someone checking the documentation. Now, a digital activity doesn't have to be dominated by the digitalization itself, meaning nothing has to be has to become pure robotics. Nothing has to run from an AI. Nothing has to be, sort of like dominated, but it's in fact, okay, in this realm, it's actually based upon customer service, but it's a complementary exercise. It's an exercise that helps people, that helps the market, that helps the consumer, that helps the people that work in this sphere. Now, it's the same thing that you can probably look at when you try to look at the public health sector. Because for anyone that has gone to a private health facility, you will realize there's a whole bunch of questions you're asked, or there's a whole bunch of details or data set or data points and data sets that are collected regarding you trying to make use of the service provided by said particular private medical facility. In many cases, first touching point sometimes is that you probably were referred by your house general practitioner, your house doctor. We call it the house doctor, meaning it's the particular medical practitioner that your family, your household is known by or is known through. So when that medical practitioner writes a doctor's note or a referral, a medical note for further medical assistance or to another specialist, because you can see literally a chain start up, even though you might be paying at every point, which doesn't sound nice sometimes, but yeah, that's what the medical, you know, the medical landscape or the health landscape also has. They also have a supply chain where you are literally the cash cow paying money at every point. But yeah, it does happen. Now, when you get to a specialist, that specialist will use what your general practitioner, your house doctor has observed based upon the ailment, the symptoms, the diagnoses that was extracted from you. Then they will work on an intervention plan or the cure. Let's call it the cure, the curative strategy. And then from there, you then have to meet with both medical professionals so that they can see whether or not you're responding to the adequate solution that they provided to the illness or the particular affliction that you've suffered from. Now, our public health sector has the exact same potential. Yes, the private sector side of the medical industry, they do have an e component to them, meaning there is an electronic presence there. For example, if you've got medical aid, your medical aid will be screened at various stages of the medical emergency that you've got. If you were in a severe accident.
We all have that one thing only we do. That unique thing that makes you real. Just like Vintuk beer.
For some, it's that secret handshake thing that makes you feel like family. For others, it's that brave hold my beer thing when the moment calls for courage. For friends, it's that fun patkos and cooler box thing where the best memories are made.
And for Vintuk beer, it's that barley hops and water thing. Let's raise a Vintuk beer for that real thing only you do. 100% real beer for real people. Not for sale to persons under 18. Drink responsibly.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back. 2 minutes into the hour of five, you're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and we're looking at the digital health report.
No policy.
The digital health policy.
It's
yeah.
a policy.
That's running for 10 years.
You would have made me happy, Helmut, with that word report, but then I realized.
I know, right?
I did read it.
For some reason, reports are fun.
No, reports are fun because there's a lot of poking in the eye.
There's a lot of cooking. Turns out this, this whole thing, especially on an international level, can be traced back to 2005.
Mm.
But just looking at it from a Namibian perspective, just on a local level, what's pointed on, especially in the whole, in the SWOT analysis, when it comes to the strength and weaknesses of the whole, like, projections, because at this point they're just projections that are being made.
Mm.
That this and this and this is what we'd like to accomplish. This and this and this are our weaknesses in terms of dispensing universal health coverage in the country, and we want to utilize technology, which is obviously at our disposal.
Yeah.
And now. But to bring that on board or to exploit the advantages that are coming with technology, we must have this and this and this. And one of those things that's pointed out is digital literacy amongst health workers.
Mm.
You can bring in the best technology, but if the people that you are giving it to, the people that have to use it to save lives don't know how to use it, and it's not up to them. A lot of us have laptops that we only use for what? Watching movies?
Oh, no, but they won't get laptops.
That's just an example.
Yeah.
You have a device that that has a lot of potential. There's so many things that your smartphone and your laptop can do. And we only use, I think, about 5-10% of it. Now.
Yeah.
You're right.
You're right.
Imagine complicated medical equipment that literally, that must be operated literally so accurate because, an error can literally mean life and death.
Plus also the reporting. It's not just about the error discussion. Helmut, because I like the executive summary a lot of this policy document, because there's that second page where the executive director writes the policy objectives. There is this one little policy objective here. promoting digital innovation. Okay, that's where you were currently based on.
Yeah.
But then there's the other one based upon the aspect of being transparent, being accountable, being having ethical governance framework around the policy and the legal standards. I mean, it's technically saying, yes, I will abide by what I have to do as a public health official. But the concern is, what will you be transparent about?
I mean, you're handling a lot of, if you are a health professional working and with a digital, you know, with the digital platforms where you have, where we have digitized people's conditions and ailments, that's a lot of confidential information you're dealing with.
Not really, Helmut. Factor this in. Let's take a very mundane statistic.
Yeah.
Something that we've spoken about. Remember back in the 2024 data interoperability discussion we had here on the Home Run. Think to yourself, okay, are they now going to abide by the National Statistics Agency's own legislation? Because the NSA is a statute. It comes from an act.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that act, it's got a actual, not a policy, but it's got the national statistics or the national data strategy is enshrined also in the same act.
Yeah.
So does this mean with a policy objective one that, remember you were highlighting the ergonomics of the discussion.
That's a lot of
The foot soldiers, the nurses, the porters, the ambulance drivers, the various ward managers, obviously being able to update servers and the digital systems of the Ministry of Health so that the Ministry of Health can conducively extract reports monthly, weekly, daily based upon, you know, what are the trends in the broader Namibian population. Remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And remember back to our data interoperability discussion. What was the biggest concern that we still don't know till today? And it's not labor force data. How many births, how many deaths happen every month? Basics.
I don't have that information.
How many births, how many deaths? If you go to the UK, the UK will tell you, the UK has a separate office. It's like the NSA. It's the Bureau of Something Statistics. South Africa has a whole ministry. It's known as Stats SA. It's a ministry.
Yeah.
It's not a it's not an SOE. It's a ministry.
It's a whole ministry. It's basically like taking the NSA and
making it a ministry. Yeah. Stats SA can tell you about trends, analyses, because they literally collect from the ministries. So when we look at these data sets, because when you bring in an e-infrastructure, if your policy now says, let's try to roll out an electronic governance or an electronic, because this is e-governance, remember, this policy document. If we now try to roll out an e-governance framework, or let's roll out e-infrastructure throughout all the public health distribution points and dispensation points, the discussion here is, first and foremost, do you have electricity where most of your sites are? Who's going to pay the internet bill? Because you must have internet. Now, there's a lovely thing, Helmut, that exists.
And the very first one.
That exists in the world of the public sector. It is literally where they build their own terminals. Separate from the rest of the private sector. So what do I mean by this? You literally build an intranet. You cannot access it through the internet. But it's a whole bunch of computers connected to each other through, you know, strategically placed servers. Let's, for example, say
it's more like a separate network.
A separate network of computers talking to each other. And this is how not the old internet worked, but the old idea around archive management and information management systems happened in the global north. So what was this? What this was you had the internet, which was made public to the rest of the world, and you had government systems that you could log into various hubs of information.
And that requires credentials for you to access any type of information, yeah.
Definitely. So let's, for example, say the Ministry of Health has this whole infrastructure built for itself. I mean, all the IT guys know this. They just won't tell us to the in public.
I think they will.
It has to take us to watch a movie, a movie like The Matrix, or like, what was the other one's name? Many of the James Bond movies, but the ones of Pierce Brosnan, you know, from the 90s, where you had to go and ask, like, what is a terminal? I thought a terminal is for buses and trains to come and park in. What is a terminal? And then it's the same terminology where they say, this is literally, think of it as a road network.
Yeah.
The road network follows where you've got your major towns, and each of those major towns has got a center that assists with information gathering as well as also information management capabilities. So let's say Otjivongo Juba region has its own hub. It's based in Otjivongo. From Otjivongo, it connects then to the other towns. You've got Grootfontein to northeast, Ochu, Ochu in Otjivongo Juba or in Kunene?
Ocho is in Kunene.
Kunene, ne? Okay, so, but still, it doesn't mean that the infrastructure just stays in that region. But it does information management of the region. And all of them are connected to the central major. Think of it like a hive mentality. I'm sorry for using like, bad news terminology, like, you know, from sci-fi movies. But think of it like a hive mentality. You've got these different nodes in each of the regions,
yeah.
But all of them are connected, obviously, through mainframe, which is a supercomputer, to Windhoek. But in each of the administrative capitals, you've got information management capabilities. So that means you decentralize the information management so that everyone across the country in each of the regions can be upskilled in terms of ICT literacy, meaning what they can enter, what they cannot enter. The PC is not meant for checking your Facebook or your Instagram. That's why you've got your smartphone for.
Yeah.
This station, this hardware, is meant only for work-based tasks. Now, it's way different from a media company. A media company needs to be on the internet. Helmut, you and I, we need to be on the internet.
Yeah, no, we don't want to, believe me.
We
sometimes I just want to take a break, but no, you can't.
Yeah, even if it's just WhatsApp. We can't even switch off WhatsApp because it's, you see something. But for something like the public sector, you actually need an internet away from the internet. Now, I know I'm not making the best case for any of the internet companies in Namibia, but that's how you avoid being hacked, first and foremost.
Yeah, because that's one of those major concerns. It's one of those unintended consequences that no one really is planning on losing massive amounts of people's private information on the dark web.
Exactly.
Yeah, so then that means you have to build the system with, in a very secure way, not just because you want information to be secure, but because that security goes beyond just providing security. It also, it basically makes people that are, trust you with their information. Now, if I'm giving you my private, my private information right now, and the next day I'm running in those information on Twitter, I'm not giving you my information next time you come asking for it.
No, Hamoud, because it would be ridiculous.
Yeah. No.
Oh, okay. The ridiculousness obviously means, yes, let's, for example, say you go to Rundu and you seek medical assistance there. You will be registered in Rundu as well because Rundu's people don't have you on record.
Yeah.
Even though you've been in Windhoek. But now here's the crux of the matter. You don't want your data to be found through a Google search. You don't want Dwight just Google searching, throwing out what do they call that? A Hail Mary request. Yeah,
someone is just scrolling through Facebook and, oh, hang on a second, this guy just had a hernia. Oh, easy. Now, there are a lot of, now, again, if you just look at the, you know, look at the policy, right? It's a lot of very good, you know, initiatives that are being proposed.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course you want, universal, you know, healthcare to be, to, you know, to be dispensed to everyone, you know, just all across the country. But we are not addressing the elephant in the room when it comes to discussions like this. And that's the same elephant in the room that you find in the food insecurity discussion. It's not the lack of the, you know, it's not the lack of food. It's the lack of the means to afford the food. It's not the lack of, most of the health, you know, health service dispensation issues are coming out of affordability.
Yeah. Well, they say it here under the weaknesses, even the SWOT analysis they did, and this is gold. Guys of Ministry of Health, this is gold for analysis.
SWOT analysis, first paragraph, last sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah, opportunities for innovation and regional collaboration were identified alongside risks, including cybersecurity threats and reliance on donor funding. You know what that took me to?
Mm.
The cancer, breast cancer scanning machine that was reported that the public sector only had one at some point. I'm not sure if they have acquired any.
And just one.
And that was also old.
It was a mammogram, right?
It's a mammogram. That has outlived its lifespan and it was donated. Outlived its lifespan, and it's the only one.
Here's some of the sad scenarios. When we look at skills, now under weaknesses they highlighted limited human resource and technical capacity.
Exactly.
That's major. That's actually the biggest weakness that I will make that the biggest. Why do I concur with this analysis that the Ministry of Health guys brought up in this policy? It's because Helmut. Major operations in Namibia. When I say an operation, a medical operation, major medical operations and procedures, people are still referred to South Africa. You cannot do a heart bypass
surgery
in Namibia, South Africa.
Both public and private.
Yes, Hamoud. Both public and private. I cannot
imagine the bill.
You can't even do cancer operations. When was it that when my godmother, when she had, there are certain cancers you can cut out and certain that you have to blast with chemotherapy.
Yeah.
The treatment way. You get them as the treatment and the surgery.
Yeah.
Some cases, you've got to go to South Africa for the cancer treatment. And even though when we've interviewed here, not just myself back in 2023, but also some of our colleagues have interviewed the Cancer Association's head, Rolf Hansen. Rolf himself has in many scenarios highlighted the uphill battle. So firstly, there's the stigma around cancer. Sometimes you just see the person was healthy 1 year for 15 years, and then the next year the person's health just literally collapses within 6 month period. Yeah. Which obviously also shows medical screening is not something that we as Namibians do on a regular basis.
Yeah. No.
Don't worry, I also don't do it, guys. Because I need to do it, but I don't do it. We actually only have one colleague that does it a lot, but I won't mention his name because that would be an invasion of privacy. You'll just sometimes see me here in the mornings, guys. Don't worry.
Constant medical screening.
No, but
Helmut,
when you reach as a guy now,
yeah.
Let me just share this word of advice. And I know some of the other elderly listeners will chime in here and literally concur. When you reach a certain age, you have to go for regular medical checkups, whether it be with your doctor or whoever, it can also be with your witch doctor, but you go for a regular medical checkup.
Yeah, I would recommend that second one.
Like, I just threw that in there because obviously, you know, the witch doctors also need attention, man.
Look, with all due respect to those guys, sometimes the diagnostics goes way off. Someone is having malaria, and how is my uncle now involved in this? Your uncle is bewitching you, so Unless a mosquito is now my uncle,
or you just don't know what happened to like 3 head of cattle, you know, during this rainy season is now saying, the next village's people,
they're after your life.
They're after your life, and then what is the actual thing that happened is that probably your cattle, went to skinny dip in the river, and then, you know, 5 hippos and 3 crocodiles had
decided to
have
a buffet.
Yeah.
No, look, the thing is, that whole medical, you know, the whole, like, constant medical screening, I think that's something that's highly recommended.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something that's highly recommended. But for some reason, it's not very practiced. Personally, I'm one of those people that basically, like, have access to like, I think, 5 to 10, you know, free, MD consultations a year.
Mm.
Yeah, it's part of the package. I've never used any of them.
But that's the thing, Helmut, because what you can obviously see now, if you guys didn't know what Helmut is saying, literally, he's one of the few privileged amongst us who has medical aid. But do you know what they're actually trying to tell you?
Yeah.
Try to have a more positive perspective to how you manage your personal health, meaning go for the regular checkup. Walk as much as possible. Try to eat healthy. You know, all those things that they say now, the medical insurance companies. But the concern out there is we're dealing obviously with the public health sector.
Where that's not a luxury.
It's not a luxury, but it's just you actually want to feel, you want to have some sense of pride. Because and first and foremost.
Not just that. I think, when it comes to you know, to things like, to diseases that are, like cancer.
Mm.
It's often recommended that early detection is the best.
It is the best.
Yeah, and the only way to detect it early is if you are doing constant medical checkup.
Exactly.
And which a lot of us are very terrible at.
And the nice thing is that your personal doctor, your GP, will have this literally this
more advanced, of a dossier.
Yeah, but this advanced dossier on your personal health,
yeah.
And they can actually analyze how things have gone. Now, obviously, COVID has made things tricky. Helmut, you should read the articles from the science journals about long COVID's impacts. Specifically, how people would just get a flu, and then, this is now 5 years after 2021.
5 years down, yeah.
Yeah, after 2021. People would just get a random flu, and then the person is suddenly just, 6 feet underground. You know, the ashes to ashes, dust to dust speech mm-hmm. that we all hear at funerals.
People can lie at funerals. You are.
The concern from that.
He never fought with anyone, seriously. Okay, go on.
He never harmed a soul. Yeah, but he owed me money. Oh. So the concern that we sometimes look at is they mention, obviously, in the SWOT analysis, and I love the SWOT analysis, but I don't know why they say weakness and weakness. It's supposed to be strengths, opportunities, threats. And weaknesses, but weaknesses and weaknesses. Yeah, let's compound things. So they highlighted here primarily that where's the opportunity? Yeah, they speak of national ownership and cross-sector leadership. So if you think of a template of national ownership and cross-sector leadership, it's literally countries that we know, Cuba. It's literally the whole of Europe, including the UK, primarily because they know the citizens of the country pay, and this is how the economics is worked into their system.
Yeah.
That what is collected from the government is subsidizing either education or health or both. There is not this discussion of not paying for one thing, but demanding that you get the service. Now, unfortunately, guys, I'm a millennial. My parent was a boomer. Sometimes you would have been told, go work for it. But in scenarios where we look at the broader scheme of things, of development, and that's where I started making the utterances of release a burden from the population so that the population of Namibia can look at achieving the various economic goals in NDP 6, i.e. thinking about ways to start a new business, instead of now having to wonder, how am I going to look after my personal health? Because I'm afraid of going to the public health, because I'll be waiting for 5 years until I die, or I'll have to go and borrow money where I know I can be helped, like within the minute today, if I go to private medical health outlets. Now, you don't, and I try to see this in the lines and in between the lines of the discussions I've heard so far. is that the government wants to say, we don't want this inequality discussion or this dual medical landscape. It's good and all. But here's the thing, Helmut. The biggest concern that sits here in the middle of this discussion, which is for the first parts of this policy not focused on, is what will the government do if the own civil servant and public servant does not want to be treated in the public health facilities?
Yeah, because they want to make it mandatory.
Because they want to be treated in the private. Look, they are technically making it, because they are technically doing that if you're a public or civil servant, since you are the medical aid facility for the public service and the civil service is CMS, so it's their medical aid payment facility.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is so that CMS pays government, meaning make the money run like this internally within government. So if government owes government money, who cares?
Now, you do see where, you know, the contradictory, you know, economic development direction this is taking, right? Because we had the public-private forum last year.
Mm.
And that's basically an agreement that they are going to, you know, the public and private sector are going to collaborate to work towards the overall goal of Namibia's, of advancing Namibia's economy.
And it's a good thing you're highlighting
that. And that is actually working the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And it's also going to bring up the discussion that was said, I think, a couple of years ago about NAMCO, of being both a referee and a player.
Yeah, from
in the oil sector.
Guide to the Namibian.
Yeah, Namibian economy. Yeah. So you have this, like, the private sector is saying, okay, now, if we have this partnership, there are services that you want, of which I have expertise of, and the manpower and the technology to provide you. Yeah. So I provide the service. You basically, well, you pay for those services. And then a public-private partnership, we make Namibia, you know, we advance Namibia's economy. If you are cordoning off public funds so that it can, you can just channel it from one public entity to another, it's it sort of like defeats the whole public-private partnership, because where does it come in?
Which is also a concern, because if we know that there's only 500,000 people with jobs, but we don't get up-to-date labor statistics from the Ministry of Labor, or the side of the Ministry of Justice and Labor, the labor side of it, what are we actually planning for, Helmut? Because it'll be wonderful to have this policy document, but we don't know what are the trends, for example, in, let's say, the dreaded, they call it the dreaded diseases, the three dreaded diseases. This is what insurance companies go in when they try to sign you up.
Mm-hmm.
So they go test you for cholesterol, high blood pressure, and diabetes.
Yeah?
Yeah. And then they random. So if you say yes to taking out an insurance policy, then you get tested for other things. Because they take blood samples of you. So you get tested potentially for HIV and for other things, you know, that screenings are also done.
I had a whole report, man.
I didn't want to know my report. I was just like, okay, you're taking all these tests. Okay, cool. Not a problem.
It was about 5 pages.
But still, when you look at this discussion, you can see, okay, so this is what the private sector does. The private sector needs data.
Yeah.
And if you get involved in the private sector runs on data. But when you come to the public sector, firstly, the customer service component is out of the door. Let me say that again.
Absolutely.
You can't put a quota on pulling a tooth. And then you tell me be here at 5 a.m., but you're only open at 7. Why must they be 2 hours early? Because the realm of the private sector is that, okay, we've got the set time frame between 8 and 5.
Yeah.
1 to 2 is our lunch, but between 8 and 5, we are open for business. But for the first time in my life, the public sector is telling me, show up at 5 a.m. to be here for 7 a.m. And we only take 10 people or 20 people. And the first people we give preference to are elderly and babies.
And babies, yeah.
And you're like, what? Why must I come back tomorrow again? Why can't you help me today? Well, we need to do our work as well. Ad break, guys. Back after this.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared. Laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager. Now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, 29 to 6. You're still tuned into Eagle FM, and this is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, your drive time show, with the national digital health report. That's an interesting expansion to the way.
Stop saying report. It's a policy document.
I like reports. I don't even know why we're not ombudsman, auditor general, parliamentary standing committee. What are you guys doing? We need more reports here. Policy. So, just finish your point, because there's a part I want to build on, and that's the restrictions that basically, from the look of things, that the health personnel in the public sector had to put in place for them to, because they're catering to a very large number.
Yeah,
they now have to decide who gets assisted and who doesn't.
So, if we start from the first weakness, Let me leave the point that I made just before the ad break. If we start from just the weakness, and I'm just going to cite this one, the limited human resource and technical capacity is the single biggest issue.
That's actually the reason behind the forced, from the look of, you know, if I can call it, the forced prioritization of we're only going to take this number of young people and this number of elderly. And if you are in between here, may the Lord be with you.
Yeah. Now, when you look at the issue of, let's for example, just say dental services.
Yeah.
How many dental services do you get from the public sector across the country versus the private sector's dental dispensation services across the country? Helmut, you would not believe me, but it's difficult to get adequate information about where can I go for dental assistance from the public sector. Because firstly, you remember, this is now new information you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And no one is giving you a straight answer. And sometimes there's not even like a general information help desk situation somewhere at some institutions across the country. You're literally at the mercy of whether or not someone is there or not. And whether or not this person speaks English or not. When you go to the private sector, you can Google search it on your phone. You'll find that Google will throw you out all those Namibian dentists in Windhoek, dentists in Swakop, dentists, and they're all private sector, dentists in Grootfontein, dentists in Tsumeb. You'll know about them.
And I think the term universal health is a very broad one, and I think the meaning goes beyond just the employment of technology. You know, that's why I think it's a very good thing that they listed limited, personnel as a priority, as basically at the top of the weaknesses with this whole thing.
Yeah,
and that's because if you just compare and contrast the personnel to patient ratio in public and private sector, you see that the health professional in the private sector can take 5, 10, 20 minutes with one patient. Basically, step by step going through everything that, you know, everything that is required for them to give you the best service available. But if you take for example, if you take, for example, a health personnel that's in the public sector, they don't have that luxury because there's one heck of a queue outside.
And then you get the other concern for the public and civil servant. Like I alluded to you, I've got a sibling that works in government. Last year when his son was born, he was told by the private sector, by the private medical facility, we don't trust the medical aid insurance from the public sector. Please pay 50% upfront. Even though it can cover his child's birth and his wife's particular stay in the hospital, he was actually asked, listen, we've got a new policy regarding how long it takes to pay or to get payment from the public sector. And this is not a secret. This has happened many times, specifically with private medical service providers. If they hear that you are someone with working in government and they ask you, are you on CMS, then they'll say, listen, at least pay something, or 50% or 30% or 40% of something on the price of the assistance that you're getting. Now, firstly, that's a concern, and that relates to Helmut, why I made the reference or the comment a little bit earlier about who cares if government needs to pay government for, you know, you getting treated at a government facility.
They realize they're both going to be taking a century to pay each other.
Exactly. But that's the concern, because even, do you know what's even a bigger concern when it comes to the public sector?
Yeah.
Go and look at when you've got these other political parties who win a constituency or a local authority election, yeah? And then go and look at the argument around, services basically, which is water and electricity and the other services. Go and see who are sometimes the biggest debtors for the local authorities. It's all the ministries. It's all the SOEs. These SOEs that have various properties and sites across the country. It's all the ministries. It's all the SOEs. Technically, internally, there is already such a template that we know of, wherein public sector to public sector, they, you know, you can, accounting just doesn't work. You can sit with all the accounting training, it just doesn't work. But when you come to public and private having to work together, it's a frustrating thing for the private sector, because the private sector knows, I have to be productive every day.
Yeah.
To make money every day, on that money, I can budget and pay for expenses, salaries, other things, new equipment, new training, XYZ, XYZ, insurance, so on and so forth. The public sector doesn't have to care about that. Now, I don't know if it's a mentality thing. For example, if an office of Minister of Agriculture in Keetmanshoop owes the Keetmanshoop municipality money. It's just an example. It's not an actual thing, but it was an actual thing in 2021. Don't worry, guys. No? 2021. Yeah. When you look at such scenarios like that, okay, the biggest debtors, let me be honest. Let me give you the honest picture. It's Ministry of Health and Ministry of Education and Ministry of Defense. Usually.
These are the guys that are usually having the biggest cut at the national budget.
Usually, yes. So, for example, go and count how many schools are in a town, Helmut. And you will always see the narrative wars by local authority politicians and by a minister, and people are throwing mud about things. But when someone goes and pulls actual data, like what happened in 2021 when LPM did that with Keetmanshoop, because the previous minister of urban and rural development, there was this whole spat about, yeah, Keetmanshoop needs to be cut off in 2021. You know, people are still trying to recover from COVID because we still had the Delta variant. Yeah, the Delta variant was in 2021. And this is towards the end of 2021. And then you know, that political party just went and pulled the records of Kitmansoop Municipality's actual financials. And they said, who are the biggest debtors?
Let's government now, shall we?
To government. So it's known history.
It's more often it's the government that owes more money to the government than the private sector.
Exactly. So private sector can also be you, Helmut, meaning you, the individual on the street. So when we look at things like this, you sometimes have to look at, okay, so it's nice and all having this policy document. And you have to sometimes ask, are we trying to do an NHS that's like in the UK or what the French have or what the Germans have or what the Italians? Oh, no, I don't know about the Italians. Or what the Dutch probably have or the Belgians.
Now, when you're going the side of Scandinavian countries, you have to ask yourself they have all this what seems like universal health, transport, education, you know, access. Mm. And have you seen their income tax?
True. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because their politicians and their government officials have motivated it to the population.
Yeah.
Now, will you come with think of yourself, Helmut, in a political sphere now.
Yeah.
If you're a politician, do you want to commit political suicide by suggesting something like that to the Namibian economy?
Absolutely not.
By suggesting to the Namibian economy that your income tax to go to 75%. If you're a business owner, it's also 75%. Anything that exists and crawls that looks like a job, a business, a company, anything of a entrepreneurial endeavor, there's a 75% tax stake that the government wants.
Yeah, so that we can have universal.
So that we can build for your roads, so that your kids can go to university for free, so that your kids can go to school for free, so that you can have...
So they can move from point A to point B for free.
Yeah, so that you can have world-class medical health and service provision, and you can have the best roads and all this. And you can have actual functioning public transport. Do you guys want this? Now, if you come with such an idea to Namibia, you will not win votes. You can forget about it, Amon.
Yeah.
There's not even an SOE that will say yes to your plan because they will be like,
are you not?
Even the CEOs will go like, 75% of my salary, but I want my GM.
I want my GLE.
Yeah, my GLE, you know. Why must I pay 75% of my salary to tax? It would be a wonderful idea because we could do so many things.
Yeah.
But I don't want to relinquish 75% of my tax because rent is not going to be 75% cheaper.
Lender will be like, thank you very much for that, excellent idea, but can I have my money?
No. There's no way that will happen.
Yeah. The point I'm making here is that for countries that have these services that we look at and start admiring them, minus a lot of Arab countries who basically they have subsidized everything because they are natural resource rich.
Yeah. But we're also natural resource rich, Ahmed. They only have oil.
Yeah. No. Listen. We also have. We are trying to factor in oil, but give it another 10 years.
We have resources.
Yeah, plural.
Plural.
Yeah.
We can go crazy. We are in Las Vegas with resources. We're not DRC.
Money is not a problem. The problem is how to use it. That's the problem. You have the resources. But if you keep shipping it on a raw form, congratulations, you're an idiot. Look, the thing is... This is not a rocket science.
Look, I'm sorry for you Namibians, ne? I know Helmut slipped in the idiot day, but you know, it is a fact.
Look,
nothing we can do.
Look, the African continent is so, when you look at, basically, if you look at it from the extractive, resource standpoint.
Yeah.
It's it's difficult to not see us in a very dumbfounding way because there are a lot of countries there are a lot of countries in Europe that have gold reserves, but they don't have a single mine.
True.
Now again, how did they come about this?
They used colonialism.
Yeah, minus the Swiss and colonialism and all that. Yeah, but
the Swiss were just clever with contract negotiations.
Yeah, the Swiss were like, just hand it over, we'll store it for you. Now,
actually, the Swiss were running the earliest Ponzi schemes, Helmut.
Yeah.
Because what they were doing technically was saying, yeah, come store it here with us.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and
yeah,
the
okay.
money they make here is the money they paid to the other guy that stored their gold here first. They were doing Ponzi schemes, man.
Forex trading 101. Look.
Swiss style.
Yeah. I know, right?
Yeah.
Look, actually, those guys, you're right, they were running the alias Ponzi scheme. But, now, to run that kind of a Ponzi scheme, you have to understand that, to run that kind of a Ponzi scheme, for one, you must have a whole another level of financial know-how, because those guys have, have the headquarter of basically the mother of all central banks. And, now, that means that, the financial infrastructure from physical to digital is in the ionosphere for them. So, for you and me, we're still trying to, we're just 30 years into independence from them, by the way. We're still trying to balance, between, taxing the people, both natural and obviously different organizations that are operating within our borders, to finance the required services to the very same people. And also, we don't want to, we don't want to just look at the Scandinavian countries and say, their taxes are this high. That's how they're able to afford all these free services. So let's just also raise our taxes that high. Because we are in the middle of also at the same time looking for investors, and no investor will walk into a tax nightmare. So, you now have to find, you're balancing a seesaw here. You have to, keep the taxes, good enough for you to afford to provide the services that are required within your borders, and also not high enough that you're scaring off investors, and actually not, risking, a riot on your hands, because you don't want a Kenya situation on your hands.
Nope. You really don't want it. It's a good thing you're highlighting that particular point, Helmut, because a digital e-policy speaks to trying to digitize things. But a digital e-policy, in its first few pages that we've all obviously gone through, it doesn't explain, we're going to install cancer screening facilities across the country, or we are going to build a psychiatric, we're going to invest in more mental health facilities, or mental facilities, let me rather put it that way, and appoint more psychiatrists,
in mind all those are specialists.
Yes, and that facility is also a specialist facility. Now, the downside here is, Helmut, having citing the UN's Global Digital Compact, that's most in the rationale of page 3, chapter 3 on page 16, citing things like the UN Global Digital Concept, iCompact, the AU Digital Transformation Strategy, and the SADC Digital Economy Strategy. Citing those things are lovely things to cite. Lovely things to cite sometimes also has to try and manifest in reality. So what are we doing in reality? In reality, I would still like to know, as a media professional, that about that report about the rehabilitative and something else side of Namibia's public health care. Meaning, what happens if you get in an accident, Helmut?
Yeah.
There is emergency care that you get, and then there is care after that. What happens after that? What happens if you go work on a industrial site and you get injured there? There's the emergency care here, and then there's care after that, and then there's something else also after that. What does Social Security start to do? What does who's the other entity, because the Social Security in this scenario also has to play a role in its right, because yes, MVA would pay you out if you're in a car accident, and then they would cover your medical bills or whatever your medical bills were. It's also a discussion of how do you actually approach the healthcare sector? Are you approaching it from the scenario of reacting when people are injured, or are you literally coming to a scenario of let's support the person? We now know that the person has now had an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Like the guy I mentioned at the start of the talk, He fell from scaffolding because his colleague downstairs at the foot of the scaffolding released. So, you know what they
instead of holding it, from you.
Holding onto it, which also shows you probably that the scaffolding was not done so properly. And this person turned around and left.
You can hold a lot of scaffolding. Honey.
Yeah. And then this guy fell and broke multiple ribs, and as he explained it to us on Saturday.
Is it one of those, you know, startups that are dealing with, I know someone cheaper?
I don't know. I really don't know. But the guy told us like an ugly stories of, he's 66, and he told us how bad it has been for him and his profession. I mean, being a welder for more than 30 years obviously should tell you that this person is an expert. But
yeah,
the economic conditions that they face, people that have these institutional sets of knowledge. I mean, it's a question, it's a time like that that you start asking, now where is NTA? Or where is NQA? Why didn't they go on this national roadshow or this national platform to try and assess skills of Namibians? Doesn't matter what age range you are, just to know what they are. And then develop a database of these skills.
Yeah.
Because some people learned on the job.
Yeah.
But actually before that, we've got to take a quick live read. Velvice University for the 2026 January applications that are now extended for the Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education. Programs for the following programs. Certificate in Project Management Level 5, Certificate in Supply Chain Management Level 5, Diploma in Legal Studies Level 6, Diploma in Supply Chain Management Level 6, Diploma in Project Management Level 6, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, and the Bachelor of Project Management Honours. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. Yeah, so, I mean, we have to be clear about, you know, to say strategy is a little bit cliche because, in essence, you know, public sector is supposed to know what their strategy is to serve the public, which I sometimes also find funny when they have the, customer service charter unveilings through their ministers. And I sit there going like, so are you guys having referrals for yourself since it's a new minister that got appointed? Yeah. Or is it that you guys genuinely don't know that you've got to serve the public? I sit there with that cynical mindset sometimes. But then I keep quiet, you know. I just sit there in silence and go like, okay, recording. Don't want to laugh right now, you know, because I'm having free coffee, but recording. But yeah, so, I mean, it's as you can see, Hamoud, it's literally a myriad of talking points that we can literally dissect. And there is not one single point that you can hammer on and say, this is the one that will help to turn around the public sector. But a digital health policy, it should be a support function. It shouldn't be hailed as the banner function. You know, the main theme of our revival, the main theme of our turnaround.
Now, the 2020-2025 global strategy on digital health in the introduction, just the second paragraph does mention that, you know, they're just running through, you know, from 2005 where the whole, you know, the first resolution to bring about this whole, you know, the digitization, more like a e-health component to the, you know, to the health service, you know. Now, the second paragraph says the following, that in 2013, the health assembly adopted this, coming out of the World Health Organization. The health assembly adopted the resolution WHA 66.24 on health standardization and interoperability, which urged member states to consider developing policies and legislative mechanisms linked to an overall national e-health strategy. This is where I think, look, I totally understand the whole, let's keep the money within the public sector. But then again, that's going contrary to the whole idea of let's partner up with the private sector. That's one. Now, two, what you are looking at here is, yes, the public, you know, the private sector wants things done now.
Oh, they can do things for you now.
They can do things for you now.
Yeah.
As long as you also perform now. You know, you want to pay, you know, you have to pay now.
Yeah.
And if you, now, one thing that we have seen with the public sector, not, you know, even within the public sector itself in a way that they do things, is that it's, you know, there's a lot of, you know, legislations, there's a lot of, there are a lot of shelves that you basically have to go through for you to do things legally. And one of those, a very easy example that have been a serious pain in on our necks, and that have led us to, you know, to basically take a few steps back and come to the realization that there is such thing as over-regulation. Now, I'm not advocating for under-regulation because I know how predatory the private sector can be when you don't have the right regulations.
Yeah.
They can go bananas. That's, you know, that's the United States today.
Or even the UK. You just have, you just get one very suspect minister.
Yeah.
As your minister of health. Who comes along with the whole, medical sector lobby group.
Yeah.
Because they've got most sectoral
lobby group. And that lobby group
paid for that minister's, let's say, their campaign contribution to their party, you know, their political party's overall elections campaign. Just get one minister like that, Helmut. They can literally throw the whole sector across the fence into the private sector.
Yeah. And when that happens, that's where you now have, you know, a scenario in the US where the, you know, a type of medicine that you can afford, that you can buy for like, $5-10 in the US is costing you, in France, the same brand is costing you, you know, hundreds of dollars in the US. That's what happens when you, you know, when you take the private sector off a leash. They, you know, because everything, and you have to understand, they're not the biggest problem here. The problem is you having loose policies because they are in a position of making money for their shareholders.
Oh yes, what Chevron also highlighted, policy coherence.
And
who was the other person? The minister also highlighted Shafuda, policy coherence.
Have the right policies, or believe me, the private sector can be very efficient.
Yeah,
they are very efficient. They are known for that. But they are going to be as efficient. The opposite of that is if you take them off a leash in terms of regulation, they're going to cause chaos.
Of course.
Yeah. Are they going to cause a lot of chaos? So, again, it's all about finding that sweet spot in between working with them and regulating them.
Mm.
Now, if it seems like we are still trying to find that sweet spot because now we are like, okay, now, do we work with them or do we just cordon off all the, you know, all the money so that we can spend it within the public sector? And then, but the problem is just last year we met with them and told them, you know what, we have to work together.
Now, you guys are pivotal to this.
We can only pick one.
Exactly. Which is once again the topsy-turvy situation. And remember, this digital policy document came out at the start of this year.
Yeah.
The public-private forum was October or was it September?
On the subject.
No, not on the specific subject, just the conferences.
The public-private forum.
Yeah, conference. When did it take place? Was it September or October?
I think it's somewhere in between there.
Yeah. So in a space of 2 months, 2.5 months at most. Nah, yeah. We see a flipping and flopping specifically by the public sector. Which also highlights the first time I heard about the, you know, trying to force the public and civil servants to use only public health services from this year was back in last year when the Director General for the National Planning Commission made such a comment. And I was like, what? Why would you do that?
I think one thing that the private sector is not worried about when it comes to that is how tricky it would be to enforce.
I suspect, Helmut, the biggest concern here is that people from the public sector experienced what my own sibling experienced. They were told, We don't trust the money that the government has. Pay up front, X percentage.
Your real good IQF mixed chicken portions. Kedora, Ethereum Mirongo Winway, Nesenda, Omirongo Winway, Oshoyo, the Bakri traditional hot cross buns. Yinashike, Edora, Omlongamano, Esenda, Omirongo Winway, Mokapati, Endadodica, Odinogusuamaskuamano Gatiri, Ovra Tunji, Okoshoprita, Akuke.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared, laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager, now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
A minute past the hour of six. This is the conclusion of Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, you were saying.
Yeah, so I suspect the biggest concern out of this particular strategy is primarily because the public and civil servants are being told by the private sector, we don't trust your medical aid scheme much because it takes so long.
Mm.
Don't worry, guys. I speak from facts. I don't speak from hearsay scenarios. People have been told that by private sector operators. The private sector gives you the best treatment. They give you the best assistance as long as you pay. Like we just said now, as long as you pay now. Now, this policy document, Helmut, doesn't actually give us guidance on are we going to build more hospitals? Are we going to hire more people? Yes, the budget announcement that the minister made spoke to historical stuff, you know, hiring people in the previous financial year, hiring teachers in the previous financial year. But we don't know what's going to be the same picture, if it's going to be the same picture going into 2026, into 2026 and 2027's financial year. We don't know if there'll be new medical, public medical facilities to be built. I mean, I remember back in 2024 when we were told to go and look at a groundbreaking, but you can only access the groundbreaking. Is there on the other side of, is it Havana or?
The one we needed.
The 4x4, where you need the 4x4 facility. And and all the journalists were making a joke on that group, on that WhatsApp group going like, now, who of us have 4x4s? Why are you inviting us to a place where we technically need 4x4s, or you need to be Superman, you fly over the trees?
No, you need an ATV
to get there. Well, why would you invite people to a place like that? You know? And that's specifically to showcase to you how far it is. Now, it's supposed to most service, that public health facilities will service, Windhoek residents from the Havana, that Havana Akana, Korean Hub vicinity, I almost said Monte Cristo. What's that? One of those neighborhoods there?
Yeah, you have Havana, Kahana, Korea. Those are the ones that you will find in that. Monte Cristo is
Kuriangava. Kuriangava.
Kuriangava. Kuriangava is also a little far from there, but you can.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you are right. No, it is. But what's that place if you come from La France, heading to, you get the La France industrial area, then there's a residential part there. What place is that again? Just right after that service station. That service station and the retail shop standing there. And then just across the road, you technically, it's just driving straight down to get to, all the way to Havana at the end. But anyway.
Which part of Windhoek do you and I live?
But I've been everywhere.
It's been a while.
You're in Comestall. Just know that. But anyway, so when you look at the lay of the land so far, yes, a place like Windhoek is a unique scenario, but we don't know. Will there be new people appointed? Will there be new infrastructure being erected? Will there be investment into new technologies that give rise to this digital policy or digital e-health or digital health policy direction? Because if you're telling me I'm just going to buy a bunch of laptops and give David a laptop, give you a help laptop, Helmut, give Dwight a laptop, and now you must go figure out how you're going to interact with the system, That was not a digital health policy.
The first question is, can you operate Excel? If you can't, I'm...
Do you know what nightmare they will get first? What's that thing by Microsoft, by Windows? The emailing and calendar thing.
It's part of the
suite, man. It's the one thing I hate the most because I've always worked on other things.
Is it Outlook?
That thing is a nightmare.
I think that that will require starting it from tertiary. You want to implement all these tools that you that you want to implement in the health services. From as early enough, either in school or in high institutions, so that the nurses that are graduating are exposed to it early enough.
Mm.
Because if you just take it straight in hospitals, and some of the people there are just it's very difficult to catch up with technology when you are at a certain age. And yes. I don't, even if you bring me a computer with a new software, and I'm in my late 50s, nearing retirement, I'll tell you, what the heck are you doing?
Exactly.
Yeah. 6 minutes into David's time. Until tomorrow, same time, same place, on your favorite radio station, Eagle FM. Stay tuned for business and economic segment with David.